Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yeah, we're back again. We're doing pretty well here. This is like 3 months on the bounce, fellas, that we've done a photo show. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? Considering a guy, I usually do like two, and then I'll be 2 years before I do another one. But I'm determined to keep podcasting on photo. Whether we go back to it being a solo show or not, I don't know yet. Because certainly while we're in lockdown, we've got the opportunity to get some other people here to ease on the crap that I have to talk. So, joining me, wow, the usual suspects. Darrow's here. How you doing, mate?
I'm great. Thank you very much. All good.
Have you had a good week?
Yes. It's been really good. And
we haven't done any challenges, have we, this week?
No, I went back to the oil and water. I do like oil and water. I've got a picture in the archives on that.
Just for Stuart's benefit, we've been doing macro challenges. We've got a photo room in our Slack instance, and we've been chucking out like five macro photos. Guess what it is? Or we've done a lot of droplets. We've done droplets and soap bubbles to the point that it's becoming obsession. It's worse. It's actually worse than Damo's reflection issue. But at least you've had the camera out, mate. Well done.
Yes.
Next to him, Ian, our consummate landscaper from Cornwall. How's it going?
Very good. Yeah, hardly touched the camera all week, unfortunately. Been busy with work, yeah.
So you're not subjecting your daughter to a weekly image yet?
No, I haven't done it yet. A couple of ideas, but
you've got to have 52 ideas?
Yeah.
Yeah, good lad. You did a 365 challenge a few years ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you said you were getting a bit bullshitty at the end of that.
Yeah, you run out of ideas. Well, I do.
Yeah, but you ran out about 300. I'd have run out about 10.
Yeah. So 52. 17 down. So not done too bad. But some of them are getting a bit samey already. So, need to think a bit outside the box.
Get to do some weird stuff. No, you know, oh God, that came out all wrong. No, you know what I mean, as in some abstract. There we go, that's the word I was looking for, not weird. Oh, I've had a bad choice of words today. The stuff that I came out with in the Mac show was just prosecutable, probably. Martin, how are you, mate?
Hi, good afternoon, guys. Not too bad. I'm unfortunately a bit like Ian, didn't get a chance to get the camera out this week. I've actually been really busy. This week's been nice. Really, really busy. I've been painting a barn for a local farmer, and it's in and out with the weather. Some days I can, some days I can't. So I keep meaning to, right, today I'm going to do my bubble photographs.
Yeah. But no. You've got to practice, mate. Okay. Keep telling you practice makes perfect.
Got to. Yeah, you've got to. But other than that, trying to live with lockdown.
And last but by no means least, a good pal of mine, Stuart, who's here in Birmingham. He's a photographer as well. Does a bit of commercial work, but he is, his passion is weddings.
Yeah, absolutely. For my sins, mate. It's,
you frigging psycho.
Absolutely. But yeah, man, I love it still. Not that I'm photographing any weddings at the moment, but that's a long story.
No, mate. Great to have you here. It'll be fun. Relax. These boys will be firing some questions at you. I'm sure, about how you go about doing things. So, I mean, because the thing is, I mean, I've always said this. Someone says to me, will you do a wedding? I'm like, nah, it's not my thing, man. It's not my thing. Is the bride arriving in a car or on a unicorn? Because if it's the unicorn, I'm definitely not interested. What is it that you love about weddings,
Stuart? For me, I mean, I've been photographing weddings for, 20-odd years, and it's still the story that I love. I mean, when doing it the old-fashioned way, where it was very much a catalogue of cookie cutter shots that you were doing, every wedding was the same. Yeah, I lost the will to live. But then when it morphed into documentary photography and trying to find that story in every wedding, it gets me excited.
They're getting married, it's the same story.
Yeah, but come on, as long as you actually put the effort in, you can find a story there. People are different, things happen differently, and you get different reactions, and it's keeping yourself on your toes to make sure you capture them. That's what keeps me going.
Yeah, I think I'm probably starting at a lower point. So have a guess how much my wedding cost me in 1997.
1997?
How much did my wedding cost me?
The whole wedding or the photography?
The whole wedding, the whole thing.
£10,000.
£187.50.
That's impressive.
So So, and the thing is, you're all going, oh, you unromantic git. That was me and Sharon, because Sharon hates weddings as well. So we ended up going to Gretna Green, and we just sat there. The guy I said, will you come and be with Mess Band? He said, you're not inviting your parents? I'm like, no. I don't want to. He said, oh, they're not going to get another chance to see you married. I said, well, I hope not. And he said, so you've got to invite them. You just got to invite them. I don't want to invite anyone. I just want to do it, and that's it. It's over and done with. He said, well, you've got to question why you're getting married in the first place then. And I'm like, well, no, I do want to get married, but I don't want a wedding. I just, you know, and that's the difference. I do want to get married, but I don't want to have a wedding.
Don't want the show and everything else.
Yeah, no. So that was it. It was just, when we paid the registry office fees, we'd gone up there, we had a hotel room for the night, and we bought dinner for all of the eight people that were there, and it came to £187.50.
I love that, mate. That is, yeah. Do it your own way. I love it.
Well, yeah, but that's the point, is you're saying about you got to find the story. I didn't like my own wedding, so I'm certainly not going to like some other buggers.
that is true, mate. It's a good job that, yeah, you pass the wedding stuff to me, definitely.
Yeah. So Stuart and I are in a referrals group for networking, and anything I get for weddings, it's like, yeah, no, definitely I can help you with that, but I'm not doing it. It's Stuart. just give it to Stuart.
Absolutely, mate. Do what you enjoy and do what you're good at. That's the best way to be.
So, I mean, so if you're pinned for a wedding, I mean, what is that, like a 6 o'clock start through to a 12 p.m. finish? Or yeah.
Normally it's 10 hours or 12 hours on with a couple for. So it's from probably normally 10, 11 o'clock in the morning through until start of dancing. Or if the couple are really with me, I'm there until the very end of the night, you know, capturing all the drunken debauchery as they really let loose by the end of the night. And that's actually really cool. I prefer the longer coverages, unless you end up with two or three back to back and then you're absolutely knackered by the end of it. But it's capturing that whole transformation and the different moods throughout the day that, yeah, it's really cool. And I've done a few last year where I was finishing at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. And as long as the party's raving, I will stay and carry on shooting and capture the whole story.
Right. Have you boys got any questions for him? Because I'm going to run out soon. You're expecting me to come up with questions for a wedding when I don't like weddings.
I've got one. From my experience, I've done a very few handful of weddings, but I think what a lot of couples don't realise is, and I don't know what it is for yourself, but say if you shoot a 10-hour wedding, what does that translate to in terms of the post-production side of it? From what I've done, I mean, sometimes that's longer than the wedding itself.
Yeah, it can be, mate. I mean, I shoot, my whole method of shooting changed over the years. And, you know, I used to go out and I'd shoot a 12-hour wedding and shoot 800 photos because I was shooting back the way that I shot film. These days, I'll tend to shoot about 5,000 over that period, more if I'm having fun. And
well, you get better as you have more experience, too.
is that the drill, is it, mate? But, yeah, so, I mean, I shoot like crazy, but then I'm super ruthless on the editing as well. So it'll probably take me an hour to edit through those and pick out the keepers, and then it's just going through and color balancing, which I don't have to do a huge amount of tweaking to. I think that's one of the advantages of shooting Fuji. You're shooting what you see is what you get straight the way through, and the colors are so damn good out of camera. As long as you shoot correctly, there's not a huge amount of actual post-processing to do. So I tend to get a wedding mopped out in a day quite easily.
So the reason I've asked you as well is that Damo's got a burning question for you, mate.
Okay, so mate, come on.
What's the attraction of Fuji? Everyone seems to have this attraction to Fuji, and I'm trying to work out why. You know, I was even looking at the amateur photographer about the new 300 or whatever it is. What's the attraction to it compared to the Canons and the Nikons or the Panasonic?
Mate, I've shot everything over the years. I mean, most of my time with digitals was Nikon, then I moved to Canon, and then moved to Fuji. And the reason I shifted over to Fuji, it was how good the files are straight out of camera. It's literally processing time. And I shoot a bit of film as well at times on weddings. So I'll be shooting the stills and then shooting a bit of video as well. And it's the fact that the baked-in color of the Fuji is just so damn good. I don't have to process the video files. And
because you were so where's the Fuji color balance compared to the Canon and the Nikon then?
It's just a more natural tone. I was finding I was able to get, it literally is a more film-like tone than you I got from the cannons. To be honest, there's still times I wish I got the cannons because they're just, it's a sharper, cleaner image. But for weddings, it's more than good enough.
Yeah, see, the thing is, well, I had to go going to Sony because I bought an FX5 to do video. So I'm like, oh, I'll buy a Sony. So I had the A7 R3. And I just found the images less sharp. They were less, and it wasn't the in-camera sharpening because I always turn that off anyway. There was less clarity in the Sony when you were looking at the high detail level, and I didn't enjoy the images. And I don't know, you know, they were bigger than the Canon images, and they looked great when they were touched. But there was something about the images I just didn't enjoy. I didn't like, and they were soft and a little bit fuzzy.
It's one of those. I mean, I look at the Sony stuff and I've got a few mates who shoot it and I just cannot get on with them for wedding stuff. I just can't get anything nice out of them whatsoever.
The workflow's bad as well on the Sony. The virtual eyesight and screen balance, that's a pain in the arse. You know, when you put your face up to it and it disappears, and you know, if you're in a dark environment, so I shoot in railway tunnels quite a lot. Mm-hmm. So you'd have the back screen lit up. And so you knew what you were getting as a rough exposure, and you'd hold it up, and just because it was so dark, it thought you put your face to it, so it would flip to the viewfinder.
Yeah, I mean, that's you saying that as well about like the ergonomics. That is one of the things I love about the Fuji system. It's the old, everything's back onto dials, and it's almost like shooting on my favorite old FMs from the Nikon film days. It's just so quick and simple to adjust everything. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I love having my 1DS Mark II. I love the dial on the top. That's my main interface. And then getting into ISO changes and stuff like that. It is pretty easy once you're into the mode of the menus. But the more that I can do with a dial, the happier I am, definitely.
So I've got loads of questions to ask. Not that
you can ask him. That's the whole point of bringing him along, mate. Fire away.
Do you work with somebody or do you do it all by yourself?
No,
Dodgy's asked that question as well in the chat room.
Yeah, no, I'm probably 95 times out of 100, I work on my own. The way that I shoot, it's becoming a natural part of the day, and my job is to blend into the day and disappear. And I find that if I have a second with me, everyone notices me that bit more, and so I don't get the same quality of interaction or lack of interaction, if that makes sense. It means when it comes to sorting lighting and everything, I have to work harder because I've got to lug the gear as well as taking the photos. But it's worth it. And then from a financial point of view, I don't have to pay anyone either. So that's always a bonus as well.
You gotta love that.
So what lenses do you take with you? What's your favorite lens to take along?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very much a prime guy. So I always shoot with two bodies. Always have back from the Canon days. And it's either 35-85 equivalent, or I'll swap to 24-50. When I'm stuck at the back of a church, I've got the 7200 there to get me out of trouble, get out of jail free card. And then I've got super wide zoom for when I'm right in the middle of the dance floor on the night and everything's getting crazy around me. But most of the day is, it's either the 35-85 or 24-50. It's how I like seeing the day. And I like having the two aspects that I can quickly switch between. It gives me a nice dynamic through the story.
So would you use onboard flash with that, or do you have any things with flash, or do you just stay within the and dial up the ISO or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, as long as the quality of the light's okay, even if it's low light, I'm quite comfortable shooting up 6400 all day long, not a problem at all. 12-8 at a real push. It's usable within the realms of an album. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't be printing the size of the wall off it, but it's more than good enough. But I use a lot of off-camera flash when it comes to the partying. I like my stuff to be really well lit and quite dynamic. I want to be seeing what's going on rather than it just being a bit of a mush, but also trying not to overpower what a couple have paid the money on with the styling as well. I'll use a bit of bounce flash when I need to, but if I can shoot natural light, as long as the lighting's good, I'll always shoot natural.
And go out on the higher ISO, which is interesting.
Yeah. It's, I'd always rather do that. I said, unless the light's not good. You know, if you've got bad lighting, if you've got terrible colours going on, then you've got to put flash on there to balance it out. And I see so many guys, especially, I guess, those who've come into weddings later, so they haven't done all the, you know, the old school days when you couldn't push things as much with the ISO, that they really shy about using flash to balance and control things. But sometimes you need to. You've got to have that flash ability in your toolkit so you can get yourself out of trouble.
And
going back to the ISO thing though, I think photographers stress out about ISO. We're the worst people in the world, you know, worrying about noise and that. But you show an image 1600, 3200 to the average Joe in the public and they don't know the difference.
Nah, exactly, mate. I mean, and the other
it's us guys who are stressed about it.
Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I've printed, you know, big wall prints, you know, 30-inch prints at 3200, not a problem at all. And, okay, so if it starts showing a bit of digital noise, shove a nice bit of grain over the top and, you know, pretend it's art, it's fine.
Turn it black and white.
Absolutely, mate. You've seen my portfolio, haven't you?
Yeah.
So my question is, what sort of percentage do you go black and white on your portfolio, or do you just go with the flow of what the wedding is?
Yeah, I'll go with the flow. I mean, I always process everything in color and black and white. I get a really good color edit on everything, and then I batch to black and white. That's 9 times out of 10 is good enough. If I really like an image, I'll go back and I'll put a bit more effort into it. The old days of processing every image individually with an action, I don't bother with that anymore. Everything just goes through Capture One. The quality of what comes out is good enough. And then when I go through and do my selections, it tends to be probably 60% black and white. It used to be less, but I think I like the colors from Fuji that much more that I'm picking more and more color stuff now than I used to. But then when I design the album, I'll normally bring them into islands of color and islands of black and white. So you'll go from one page to another in either color or black and white. It's very much I use it on a design aspect then.
There's a question from Dodsy in the chat room. He says, you say you're using off-camera flash, so how are you doing that? It can't be just arm outstretched.
No, definitely not, mate.
I've known you for 2 years now, and actually I believe it could. But yeah, possibly.
But yeah, I mean, my kit is really, really simple. The flash system that I use, I've got a little Godox on camera flash for a little bit of fill, but the remote system I use is the Cactus system. It's absolutely brilliant. It's never let me down, even in, you know, commercial environments where you've got all sorts of radio frequencies going around and everything. It's just bulletproof and just works. And also they're made like a tank, so when you drop them, they carry on working as well, which what I'm like on a wedding is a good thing. So I tend to normal setup for a wedding on a night. I'll have a couple of stands quite high up and shooting in, gridded, so they're not overspilling the room too much, and they offer a little tiny little radio trigger on the camera. And then if I need a little bit of fill, I'll just put this tiny little Godox thing on. It's like the 50 quid flash, but it's absolutely brilliant.
Everyone's
would you set those lights manually, or can you control them on the trigger?
Yeah, so all the lights I shoot manually, but the trigger has got some basically TTL control. So it works on a TTL system, but you can dial it in manually. So it's the best way I've come to use it. I've used all sorts of different things over the years, but yeah, so the Cactus system is brilliant. I'm a manual guy though. I like having control. I don't like things changing. I like to be able to control it. The only time I'll ever use TTL is just for a little bit of fill. If you know, I'll have that dialed right back, a couple of stops back to just lift those shadows up a little bit. That's all I need.
So have you got Cactus flashes on the Cactus triggers, or are they linked in a Cactus loop?
Yeah, so the Cactus flashes have got the receiver and trigger built into them.
Yeah,
so then it's just a tiny little thing on the camera. So it's brilliant. I've got 4 of them that I have floating around. So I'll normally have 2 set up, but depending on what the dance floor is going on. I mean, if I'm shooting a Greek wedding, I'll have 4. So 2 either side of the band and then 2 way back in the room, just giving me that bit of fill. Just literally means then they're on 4 different channels, so I can turn them on and off as to where I'm shooting. So I normally like to cross light a dance floor and just give it that sort of dynamic aspect, and then I'll just choose which lights I've got turned on and which ones I've got turned off. I'm just trying to remember to keep myself out the shadow of the flash, because there is nothing worse than the shadow of a photographer clearly outlined onto the dance floor.
Well, are they run off mains then at that point? You're looking for a socket, or they're all battery?
No, all battery, mate, all battery.
So how many fires are you getting off them then?
About 1,600.
Wow.
Yeah, but I've got them so dialed back, because I still shoot at a really quite a high ISO, because I want to get the light of the room in there. I'm almost putting this lighting in as a bit of an effect and to just give it that bit of punch, really.
So where are you at f-stop then? Are you looking for very shallow depth of field then within that as well to keep your light?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably shooting 2.8 to 3.2, which, don't forget, obviously being on a crop sensor gives me depth of probably closer to f4.
Right. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I mean, and you'll increase your cycle time then as well if the power's down.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm probably shooting at like 1/28th to 1/64th power. That's all. Yeah. It's very rare I go above that. I don't tend to need it.
I'm just looking at the prices here. 175 quid for the RF60 flash.
Yeah.
With the triggers built into it, and then an on. That's a really good setup for 800 quidish, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I've had everything over the years. You know, I've always went branded flashes, so I had all the Canon gear. You know, I had all the Nikon gear in the past. I've gone the Godox route as well with other flashes. I've got their AD200s. So it's like a flash, but it's 200 watt power. They're brilliant. But I'll use those more when I'm using modifiers.
Yeah, see, I've not got an awful lot in terms of flash usage, because if I'm a lot of the time I'm in industrial environments where people are wearing high vis, so the second you pull a flash out, all you do is get bounced back straight away off it, and they're just like this white ball walking towards you. So the opportunities to use it are fairly limited. I'll usually stick one in the car, but I won't carry it in the bag because it's just unnecessary weight. If I really need it that badly, I'll go back to the car and get it. But and I use them a bit around the studio, but two flash heads is more. Well, it's probably almost twice as much as what I need. I tend to use the Canon speed light that I've got, which I've got the 630, 650.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So it's powerful enough, and I probably just use that, and that's it. And if I do an event, I'll use that and just dial it back, like you say, just to kind of fill in the face a little bit, maybe on camera, so it looks a bit more paparazzi.
Yeah, definitely. And you don't need that much power. That's the point, especially because you can ride the ISO. Then, makes sense.
Yeah, I'm with Ian on this, though. I think I'd be struggling if I pushed my ISO beyond 1600. I don't like the look of it myself, I think, which is the worst thing more than anything else. But again, you look at the ISO, and if you look at the Sony, the Sono did pretty well on ISO, and I would have said it was fractionally better than the 1DS Mark V. The 1DS Mark, sorry, not one, the 5D Mark III. But the one thing that was interesting, and Martin's got an old 6D. I've got, I looked at the 6D when I got one of those and a 5D Mark III, and I thought to myself, the 6D has got a less noisy sensor. And everyone's like, rubbish. I'm like, I'm telling you, I take better shots at night with the 6D at high ISO than I do with the 5D Mark III. No, absolute rubbish. And then someone did a sensor test on it and published it, and sure enough, the 6D outperformed.
Yeah, 6D, that's got a cracking sensor on it. I mean, I shot brilliant 5D Mark IIIs before I moved to Fuji, and they are absolutely brilliant. But you just get, it's whatever you're comfortable with, isn't it? But definitely the performance of the Sonys are insane. I mean, I've got some mates who are videographers, and those cameras almost seem the bloody dark. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I bought the S, and I ended up selling it just because it was a 12 megapixel sensor. It was too small. Yeah. But that was set up for night use. That's what, you know. And I gotta say, I wasn't that impressed.
Okay.
It saw well, but it was grainy. Sorry, Damo, go ahead.
Take this in a fun sort of way. But could an iPhone do some of your shots for you?
Yeah, when the lighting's good, of course it could. If you've got good lighting, the quality that you can get out of a camera is good.
Light, yes, it's very much the lighting, yes.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, I could go back and shoot on, 400, MPH film, and it would be great as long as the lighting was good. But if you put it in a back end of a cave, you've got to have a bigger sensor. And at times then, the Fuji can struggle because of it being a crop, because it's not amazing at the high ISO, but it's good enough. And it sounds terrible to say that as a pro, but it is. It's our cameras are a tool. That's all they are. And as long as it's doing the right job, that's good enough for me. And then I'll hire something else when I need it for other work.
Well, we've had a recurrent theme that somebody said, if he had so much money in the world, what camera should he buy? And Ewan says, as last week, it's the lighting that we need, not necessarily the camera.
Absolutely. Lighting first, then your glass, then whatever you shove on the back of it. I mean, that's why Leica still stands out, so high, because of the quality of the glass. But that's why, lenses still go for 20 grand that are 20 years old.
Yeah, but I just think the everyone knows what I think about Leica. I've never known anyone who's bought a Leica who hasn't sold it again afterwards.
A good mate of mine down Surrey.
I don't want to know him.
He's bloody awesome. He's actually a great photographer and adores his Leica stuff. I always pick fun at him and say that he must be a dentist in another life, but that's
but that's the thing, is that if you're looking at a Leica and you're looking at buying some of their smaller stuff, and actually for another 2 grand you can start to enter the medium format market. And that's the bit that I really struggle with. I'm sorry. That's I don't like it. But the thing is, the point that Damon made there, if I had 4 grand, which camera should I buy? 3 grand on a light, 1 grand on a camera. And there are no shit cameras anymore. The basic D300, etc., even though it's Nikon, will shoot a decent image.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. If you put decent light in front of it and you know what you're doing with light, which, of course, as we all know, is the most important thing, then you'll get great images.
You shoot the same body, Stuart. So when you're going in between, you've got that familiarity, or do you have two different bodies?
I've actually got two different bodies most of the time. So I was about to upgrade them this year. I'm not at the moment because cash flow is a bit tight. But I shoot on the XH1 and the XT2. So I mean, they're a couple of generations old, both of them, but they do the job. But a lot of the menus are so similar, and because most of the stuff you do is on dials, you don't end up diving into menus anyway. It quite happily swap between the two cameras all day long.
Yeah, interesting.
I'm a dentist myself, background, and I enjoy taking pictures of people. I have no problems with people, but I noticed a lot of amateur people don't like taking pictures of people. So the people skills, how do you use your people skills when you're doing the wedding? It'd be interesting to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially when it comes to controlling the more formal parts of the day, it's the way you get the best out of people. It is a balancing act. I mean, we've all been there at weddings where it comes to like the groups, for instance, and you need to get people to do certain things for you and everyone hates you. But if you do things in the correct way, do them quickly, try and have a bit of fun with things, then people tend to accept you. That's certainly my approach. Don't get me wrong, if people aren't doing what I need them to do, I will quite happily point that out to them and get it done. I'm there to do a job. I'm not there to be anyone's friend. But I tend to just go in really, really chilled out and try and have fun with it. If I'm having fun, then I get a better rapport with everyone.
I think I've just realised why another reason why I don't do weddings is I've got no people skills.
Possibly, mate. Yeah. But it's you got to have fun. And I mean, with my couples especially, it's because they book me because I'm a documentary photographer. They don't book me for the posed work. But of course, you've got to do some of the posed stuff because you've got to create those images as well. And it's getting them to be themselves is the trickiest thing. The best version of themselves, of course. Standing them correctly, drop a dress size, all those sort of tricks. But it's getting them to relax and just be them. That's where the interesting aspect is. And it's just finding ways to tease that out of people. A lot of it is just taking their mind off things and giving them their confidence in the way that you say things. and just trying to get a natural rapport with people. That's my biggest thing.
So come on, everyone's being really polite. You've got to have some stories to tell us, mate, about where it hasn't, where the story has been a really good story, if you know what I mean.
Oh, mate, there's been some things over the years for sure. And also some cock-ups along the way as well. I mean, I'll never forget taking a confetti shot on a Hasselblad and pressed the button as the confetti went up in the air. There was no film left. That was just absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it's and then dropping a Hasselblad before I'd even taken a shot on the wedding day. Yeah, that one hurt, especially as it was a H1 and it was brand new, and it was like, oh man, that really hurt. But yeah, it's the biggest thing is just how you get out of the end of it. And you know, we have things go wrong. I had a couple of cameras. Well, no, I had one camera go down on me last year, and a lens go down on me. And they're abused as tools, so it will happen eventually. But you've got to cover your arse. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I always shoot with two bodies, so that even at any point of the day, if things go wrong, you can switch, and within half a second, you've got another camera in your hand and you're already shooting.
Have you ever forgotten them?
I've forgotten memory cards before.
No, everyone's done. Yeah, no. We had a conversation last week. Paul Painter was here, and I said every photographer, every professional photographer has forgotten at least memory cards, and some have forgotten cameras.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, the worst one I had, it was actually a corporate job. Got up at 3 a.m. to drive over to Wales, ready to photograph this store launch. And thankfully, the store wasn't ready when I got there, because I had to wait for Wilco's to open so I could go and raid their shelves for SD cards. that scared the absolute crap out of me. It really did.
Have you got a recurring nightmare?
No, thankfully not, but I'm quite chilled out, but oh man, it scared me. But then the other side is accidentally formatting something as well.
Yeah.
Done that. And that, yeah, that's scary until you finally get those cards back. It scares the crap out of me.
Do you shoot dual cards or not?
Yeah, shoot dual cards now, yeah. That's one of the things that, you know, love about it. Well, I mean, of course, most cameras these days is dual cards, but it is a massive, massive help. But it's still remembering to manage those dual cards when you get back to the studio as well, especially in the middle of a wedding season when you're covering 15 weddings in a month, to remember to make sure you've got everything backed up like crazy. I had one of my backup hard drives go down last year, and I thought I'd lost a wedding. And that took years off my life. As soon as that happened, I went out and bought another 3 sets of cards. And then I've now got a wallet that they stay in, labeled up, until that wedding's actually handed over. Then I'll reuse the cards. Man, that scared me. That was the worst experience I've had.
So I've got 4 of these that just hold SD cards.
Yep.
And there's 2 of them in each bag, because I only ever carry 2 bags with camera gear in. And they've all got at least half full, so that I can, and they've got video cards and cards for stills. And then one of them's got do not use in, like, a Dyna tape on the front. And anything that comes out of a camera goes into the do not use box. And then when I get in the car, the do not use box and the cameras are emptied out, and the SD cards are put in my pocket of my jeans, you know, like the money pocket. So if anyone wants to bump me over the head and nick my cameras, have them, but you're not getting the pictures because I've got them in my pocket.
It's interesting you're saying that. I mean, something I swapped 2 years ago, because I used to have a plastic card holder like that, and it slipped out of my pocket, thankfully, when I got in my car. So I found it in the back of the car. But since then, I've swapped to the Think Tank Pocket Rocket, because it's got a leash on it. And so my cards are literally attached to me until the moment that I get back into the office.
Yeah, I did Uxbridge closure years ago, and I was taking some pictures and shooting some video and using my wire cam. And the bag was open and in shot, and I didn't bother about it. I just thought, well, if they see it, then good luck to them, because it's behind a post. But the guy that was there helping direct him with the shoot, he picked the bag up and moved it so it was out of shot, because he worked out it was in shot. When I went over, the bag was open. I was like, oh, mate, never move an open bag. Always zip it up and then move it. Okay, yeah, no problem. Might do it again. Great. Got back to the hotel and couldn't find my card wallet. Nothing. Oh. So I'm out. I'd spent 10 hours out on track. So I went back to the site from the hotel and I'm there with my helmet torch on, walking along the rails, trying to find my card wallet. And I spent 2.5 hours out there crawling up and down on my hands and knees looking for this thing in the pitch black. Couldn't find it. I was all right. I'll come back in the daylight. It'll be here in the daylight. Someone might have it. As I went out, I went through the site access to sign in and I went to the guy that was the comms guy for sending out the reports of progress and stuff like that. And he went, "Hello, Ewan." I'm like, "Hello, mate. How you doing?" He said, "I've got something for you." I pulled the wallet out.
Wow. Talk about relief.
Someone handed it in. Like, Jesus.
Jeez, man.
That was it. That was the worst one. And ever since then, it's like, when I finished, cards go in my pocket and that's it.
Yeah.
Take all the camera gear you like, but...
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't give a damn about the gear as long as I've got the cards. That's what matters, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, and then they sit on the desk here and I don't put them back into the active card wallets until I've got them on two drives at least. And then I'll overgo.
So Stuart, come back to you. What's your favorite stat? What's your sort of brand? What brand would people get from you? What would you say that you can tell straight away it's a wedding shot by yourself?
Yeah, for me, it is. I keep using the word story, but that's exactly what they get. Every wedding will look the same as far as quality. It will be full of emotion. It will capture everything that's going on. You'll get the sort of real crisp black and whites that everyone sees. But I think it's the fact that it doesn't matter what happens, they're going to get the same quality story. And so, yeah, it can be a great summer's day and everyone's laughing and, well, apart from me, because I'm normally dying with hay fever. Or it can be a real crappy winter wedding and the quality of what they will get will look exactly the same. Full of energy, full of life, bringing almost all the story together with a few wow moments. And that's basically it. It's those few portraits just set the story apart at different points of the day. So we'll be capturing the golden hour shots that, you know, we all love capturing and be capturing some creative night stuff and lighting it up. So but most of the day is the story. What's that, mate?
So you can make a black and white.
No, that's the candid stuff during the rest of the day, mate.
A question from Dodsy in the chat room again. Do you do a pre-shoot with the wedding couple so you familiarise yourself and get comfortable with them?
Yeah, it's not so much for me. It's more for them. It's for them to get used to being photographed. The reason I started doing it is because I say people book me because they want the natural story. And so they're not posy people. They quite often describe themselves not as photo people. And so then to get them past that and get comfortable doing a pre-shoot really helps. So I'll do that anywhere apart from their wedding venue because Christ, we're going to have enough photos there. So we'll go off somewhere else, hopefully somewhere that connects with them and then try and do something quite cool with it. Then from a financial point of view, can work out quite well because there's upsell potentials off the back of that as well, which of course, you know, we're running a business.
How important is those conversations before the wedding and what you agree you're going to shoot? How important is that compared to the actual day and not getting to the end of it and handing them some images and they go, well, this is not what I hired you for?
Massively, mate, massively. And it's one of those, even from the very first inquiry stage, if I've got a couple that when I'm talking to them, I'll get them talking about themselves and talking about their day and what they want from it and everything. And if I start getting the wrong vibe off them, I won't book them. It's as simple as that because I know they won't be happy. And yeah, of course, you know, from a money point of view, it's always think, yeah, I'll take the booking. But from experience, it just doesn't work. I've had
so you do arriving on a car or arriving on a unicorn.
Mate, I will do anything if they are my sort of couple. If they want a natural story, then sweet. If they want to look like a celebrity in a magazine, if they want everything polished, I'm not interested. I won't go and sit there and airbrush everything. What they get from me is really natural, and they've got to accept that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'll go in and I'll get rid of exit signs if they're really annoying. I'll get rid of a zit if it appears on the bride's forehead that day. But apart from that, no, I'll keep it raw, keep it, you know, guts and all sort of thing. And because why does it matter? It's meant to be documentation of the day, not a set of creative photos. But yeah, I mean, it's right the way through. They've got to know what they're going to get. And that's why it's really important to make sure my conversations are with a couple, not with mom or dad, because normally what mom and dad want is different to what the couple wants. I'm very careful to make sure I shoot enough to keep mom happy, because keeping mom happy is always important. But yeah, it's making sure that they understand what they're going to get from me, what they're going to get quality wise, quantity wise, and also what I'm not going to shoot. You know, I'll never shoot to a shots list ever. I just flat refuse. It's written in my contract that no, I won't do it.
Does that exclude the group shots? Because they tend to be a little bit kind of, you have to have.
Yeah, they are, but that's something I curate with them. Right. Or if they give me a list. I mean, I had one last year and absolutely great wedding, but she gave me a list of 45 group shots. I got them done in 50 minutes. So, you know, impressive work to get through them as quick as I did, but it was hell. But I told her, yeah, not a problem at all. We can do that, but it will take up an hour of your day and it will mean we can't do this. We won't have time to capture you. Your candids while you're having a drink with everyone, because you're not going to be having a drink with everyone, and let them know that's what was going to be the case. I possibly got a little bit arsy with it, but I was like, look, it's fine. I'll do it. It's your day. It's not my story at the end of it. If that's what you want, sweet. Let's do it.
Good. There you go. So if you've been listening to this podcast for years and wanting to know more about weddings, I hope you didn't stop listening before this thinking Rankin's never going to talk about weddings because he hates them, because I do. I still do, even though Stuart has talked most eloquently about them.
Thanks, man.
I will never do a wedding if I can possibly help it, as Martin well knows.
Well, we discussed this last year, didn't we, Ewan?
Yeah.
And in the end... and I really don't want to embarrass Ian here, but Ian came along and did our wedding photographs.
Basically, you're saying I was second choice.
No. We'd had a conversation and we were talking about weddings at Milton Keynes Station. And I went, before you ask me, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
No, Ian was invited. Talk to Ian. Ewan was invited as a guest first and then said, look, don't, you know, and then your name came up naturally after that. But the one thing I will say, and I said, I don't want to embarrass you, Ian, but you did do a fantastic job. And Stuart, what you were alluding to was the one thing that when we got the photographs back and we were going through them, the one thing that stood out was it was a fun day. We had a great day, we had a fantastic day. And that comes through in the set of the photographs that we got. There was just so much, all the people, all the shots he got just showed that everyone was having a good day, a real laugh. It was quite an unusual day. It was like a village wedding. We live in a small village, and practically the whole village were invited. But it was just stunning that we noticed, looking through them, that yes, that came across clear as day. And I was quite surprised about the number of black and white shots that you did that really worked. It was an awful lot of shots.
That was because of the noise, see? I turned them to black and white.
You're making a wedding present, but yeah.
Yeah, that was brilliant there, Ian. I was bigging you up at that point, yeah. But it was amazing that the number of black and white shots that worked better than the colour. It was that to me really surprised me. So we had a great day and it was captured properly. The only thing I was like, I've never, well, some friends of mine asked me once to photograph their wedding. They were short of money and all this sort of stuff. And I said, yeah, of course. And I've never been so terrified in all my life. It was only as we got nearer and nearer the day and I started to realise the responsibility of this. And like yourself, I think I had three cameras in the car and I had God knows what. And I had, in them days it was film, so I had 400 rolls of film and all that sort of stuff. And I've never been more frightened in my life about doing that. And it came out passable. It was a bit routine and by the numbers, but we got the day and we got the things and it was quite a laugh. The last one I'll say is about the cock-ups. My sister asked me to video her wedding, which okay I did and all that, and we did a great video. The only trouble was I didn't turn the microphone on, so I didn't get a single one of their vows or anything like that.
Oh, dear.
And she almost disowned me at that point. So yeah.
Oh mate, I've been there with audio, capturing audio on a wedding, especially in the craziness of everything is. Yeah, that's a total different level of stress. But I love you had the way you described that then with, you know, what Ian captured. It is very much a wedding photo should be about capturing the mood and the emotion and the excitement and the characters. And I always think anyone should be able to pick up an album and get a feel for what the wedding was about. And if you can do that and you can get excited by the end of it, boom, you've done exactly what you need to do. It doesn't matter about the noise in the images. It doesn't matter about what's color and what's black and white. It just matters about how it makes you feel. That's the biggest thing.
I think I did a photo walk down at Borough Market with Martin and the London Mac User Group a few years ago. And while we were walking around Borough Market, they were going, so what kind of things should I capture? I said, well, the thing that's evocative the most of Borough Market is the smell for me. So try and capture the smell. They're like, it's photography, mate. How am I going to capture the smell? I said, you'd be surprised. If you find the things that are making those smells and you capture them in the right way, you can look at those and your brain will start to put that smell back into your brain. And you begin, I can't smell it because I'm obviously not there. I'm sat in my living room, but I'm looking back at an image from a day at Borough Market where and the power of that is huge. I would never apply that to a wedding because I'd never do a wedding, but I totally get it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's another one straight away springs to mind. Neil James, brilliant photographer. And one of the things that he does, if he feels like his work's getting samey on a wedding day, he'll go and record some audio. Go and record audio for a couple of minutes. And then he'll go back to where he was, you know, away from the wedding and listen back to the audio to find out what was actually happening. Right. And then he'll go back and find that. So sound, as even if you're not using it in the final production, remember sound matters. It's sounds and smells. And I mean, I love shooting in the kitchens as well, because that's part of the story. Chefs normally growl at me when I first go in there, but it's I want to capture everything and be reminded what it was about.
Yeah, it struck me there as well, Stuart, that just that little conversation, I probably cared less with film than I do with SD cards. I and it's ridiculous because they're probably more robust and far better off. And I used to treat film like shit.
Oh, mate. I mean, yeah, back in the day, it was a case of shooting. I remember shooting Greek weddings. We'd shoot like 30, 40 rolls of film on a wedding. It was insane. And yeah, you just throw them in the bottom of the bag. And
didn't even put them back in the canister.
Oh, God, no. I'm three canisters away straight away. So rip them out and then just throw them in the bag.
just think about how badly you're treating film, and yet you go, oh, no, no. Oh, hang on. Come here. I've quilt-lined me shooting case for you, so.
Sweet dreams. I'm terrible. You haven't seen the inside of my camera bag, mate. It's, as I say, my cameras are tools. That's all they are.
No, I'm just thinking about the cards, though. It's just like the amount of protection that I put into a card, which is significantly more robust than a film ever was. There is a paradox in there, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
If you've got a type of photography that you want covered and we can invite a photographer along who knows more about it than I do, we'll do it. It's not a problem. Send us an email at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and I will get my best photographer in and we'll have Stuart back another time and do another one. We'll fire in some different questions. We'll try and find some medical photographer. Medical. I'd love to get a medical photographer in. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Yes, that'd be good.
That would be really good.
So, I mean, I did a load of dental photography, and that's really interesting, setting up the ring flash and everything. But what got me with that is the sameness of it, having to shoot it in a regimental way, because you have certain rules and regulations you got to follow. That's the thing.
Yeah, no. So we'll do that. And also, send us your questions in. If you've got questions of a technical nature, we didn't get any this week, but if you've got any, send them in, and we'll get them discussed and get them answered. Where can everyone get a hold of your demo?
Oh, DamienWormsley.com.
Excellent, mate. And Ian?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk.
Cheers. Martin?
Get me at mine at lmark.org.uk or Magic Man in the Slack room.
And you've got to have a meeting coming up soon. Are you doing them online now or are people still welcome to attend?
We are, and we're now attempting to do a live feed on a YouTube channel, so you can either be there physically in the pub, or we're trying to do a live feed out to all and sundry. Obviously we can't do the pub next week, and then we may even be expanding to a UK mug, because all the mugs are getting smaller and smaller, so we might become a online UK mug.
Excellent, mate.
So you'll be very welcome.
Brilliant. And Stuart, where can people get hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Best place is stuartjamesphoto.co.uk. That's the wedding website. You can see all the stuff on there and get a real good feel for what I'm trying to do, including watching a film at the start of me actually shooting a wedding.
Thanks for coming along, mate, and being a good sport and giving us all your experience.
Appreciate it, mate. Good to meet you all.
We'll be back again next week. As I say, BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, or we'll follow the network at British Tech as well. And I'm on Instagram at 12 Space Media. Have a great weekend. Back for the big show at 8 p.m. See you all next week. Thanks for listening.